Hello and welcome back to the 18 Yards podcast. Today, we're going to be discussing what was the craziest transfer window that we've seen in a long, long time. We had the two best players of all time moving clubs, Ronaldo making his way back to Manchester United, PSG making a shock move for Lionel Messi, Lukaku going from Inter to Chelsea, Grealish going from Villa to City, and that's just some of the bigger names that were on the move. Today, in today's episode, we're going to be rating the transfer windows of 10 big clubs. So to say, we'll also be looking at some other teams that have done well in the transfer window and some transfers to watch out for outside of these 10 teams. As always, I've got with me here, Ari. So Ari, before we get into the transfers, you know, we're into the international break, which is not really a good time because football's really felt like it's been back, you know, with the full stadiums in most places, the fans are back. That's when you really feel like football's back. What have you made of the first 3 weeks?
I think they were really entertaining, to be very honest. You know, we saw teams like West Ham United, teams like Watford, surprisingly get off to a great start in the season. And we saw teams like Arsenal and Norwich who were disgustingly bad. But it's just the beginning of the season. The early signs prove to us that it'll be another excellent season in store for us. Really looking forward to the international break ending because, as you said, football was finally back and it doesn't seem nice to have a break suddenly, you know, in club football. But, you know, special shout-out to Cristiano Ronaldo, who just scored his 110th and 111th international goal. So that's something I always look forward to national breaks, that is Ronaldo breaking a record. So, but that's also over now. So hurry up and let's start the club football again.
I think, you know, I'm not a big fan of international breaks, but I don't mind them. I always enjoy watching some of the newer players make their way onto the international stage. I think there's some games that aren't that bad. I think there's England, Poland this week. I'm going to enjoy watching Italy play with the expanded squad players like Zaniolo, Chiesa, the sort of youngsters that I really enjoyed watching over the summer, come back into the team. But yeah, like you said, fantastic start to the season. I'm really happy with Tottenham's first, Arsenal's 20th. I've taken a screenshot of the table, and I think I'm gonna have that one for a while. But yeah, I think next week's episode, we're gonna be looking more into how the transfer window has impacted our predictions of the season. I have a couple of changes for mine. I don't know if you will as well, but we'll be looking into that next week. But this week, I think let's get right into it. So we're going to be ranking or rating each team's window out of 10. We've got in 10th place Liverpool. We've given them a 3 on 10. They didn't have many signings. They made one signing early on in Ibrahim Konate, who's a fantastic player. You know, they got him in from Leipzig. He had been a really, really good player for Leipzig, a staple in their defense. They got him in for 36 million. The outgoings were Wilson for 12.5 million, Shaqiri for 5.5 million, and another youth player for about 5.5 million. And obviously, they lost Wijnaldum on a free transfer to PSG. So, not too much spent, not too much brought in. You know, a very quiet window. They had more of an emphasis on their contract renewals. They basically renewed everyone's contract. You know, Trent, Henderson, I think Salah as well.
Fabinho.
So yeah, so that they had much more of an emphasis on contract renewals. But obviously, you know, we are rating transfers and just contract renewals. Although that is good business, doesn't put a team, you know, high up in this list. I would say that Konate is fantastic cover for the likes of Van Dijk, Matip. He probably, I think, look to take Matip's place in the squad and compete with Joe Gomez. But, you know, I'm a bit worried in terms of Liverpool leaving their squad too thin. I don't know what you think about this, but I think, you know, we saw that a couple of injuries really got to them last season. That was in defense. And I'm a little worried that now if they get a couple of injuries in their forward line, that they may have a problem. There's only so many positions that Jota can cover.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. I mean, forget the injuries last season. That was really unfortunate, to be very honest. They've gotten Konate, who's a brilliant player, but again, he's very, very injury prone. I mean, he's missed a lot of chunks of his playing career because of his injuries. And, you know, like you said, they've instead of strengthening that attack, they've let go of Shaqiri, who was a very reliable squad player, in my opinion. And, you know, forgetting the injuries, like we saw last season, Mane was massively out of form last season, and they literally had no one to replace Mane with in crucial clutch games, which really costed them the season. And it is going to be same this season if one of Mane or Salah is never out of form. But if Mane is out of form, who do they replace him with in some games where he can get some rest, you know, get his head right? There's literally no one. Firmino is injured, and like you said, Jota cannot cover for all three people at the same time. So I think that is going to hurt Liverpool. And I mean, Klopp is a great manager, but he can't, season after season, he can't be doing the same things he does with the same thin squad that FSG gave him every year. So I don't expect much from Liverpool this season. I expect them to finish top four, and the transfer window surely a 3/10.
So I had them finishing fourth, and we'll get into this, like I said, next week. But I had them finishing fourth. But, you know, obviously, Liverpool finishing third and United finishing fourth. Obviously, now that United have gone and got the most clutch player in the world, I think that sort of changes my opinion. I think United move up to third or even second, you know, because I'm not too hot on City's transfer window. So moving on from Liverpool, we've got Barcelona in ninth place with a 4/10 window. Go ahead. You're the La Liga expert, so tell us what you think.
So I think it's, you know, for a person who's watched Lionel Messi in the La Liga, you know, terrorizing defenses, terrorizing teams like Real Madrid. It just seems very empty now that the league, forget the club, the league has lost the best player of all time in Lionel Messi. And more than a league, it's obviously it's going to impact Barcelona. I mean, Messi was giving you 30 goals and 20 assists in one season. So you're taking out 50 goals and assists. And because of their financial position, because of what their previous president Bartomeu did throughout his tenure as president, they're in a very bad financial situation. And because of that, they've had to let go of players like Griezmann, Emerson, very reliable players, very good players, especially with Messi gone. I was expecting Griezmann to finally settle in the Barcelona team and finally have a great season. But now that he's gone, Barcelona even thinner in the attack. I mean, the three attackers that are going to play for Barcelona week in, week out are Memphis Depay, Brathwaite and Dembele. Depay is an exceptional buy. He's an exceptional buy. I think I've been a fan of Depay for a long, long time. You know, he has that aura around him. He has that skills that you like to see in a footballer. You know, that beauty, beautiful magic that he does with his feet. He's got goals in him. He's got assists in him. But he's no Messi, let's be honest. Depay is not a Messi. Brathwaite, he started off the season well, scoring two goals and assisting one in the opener. But he's not a player who can sustain the same level throughout the season. I wouldn't call him a top player. And same with Dembele. Dembele plays a month and gets injured for 11 months. So it's not a very reliable attack. Obviously, they have given number 10 to Ansu Fati, who will be coming back in October from injury. He's a really exciting player. Looking forward to watching him in this season. On top of that, they've added Eric Garcia to the defense. I think their defense was horrible last season. Eric Garcia doesn't solve their defensive issues. In fact, with Piqué's aging, and with Longley still in the team, Umtiti Longley still in the team, I think the defense is as bad as it was last season, even with Garcia's, with Garcia's arrival. So, you know, with the players that they've bought, and unfortunately with the financial troubles that they had, they had to wait till deadline day to register Sergio Aguero, who's anyway not going to play for them till October, if I'm not wrong, because he's also injured. So I think on paper, this Barca...
I just want to come in here because, they've obviously, at the beginning of the window, they were looking like, or before the transfer window started, they were looking like this team that were being very smart, you know, bringing in players like Depay, Aguero. They were looking like they were going to get Wijnaldum as well, Eric Garcia, all on a free. Basically what PSG did. But sort of as the window went on, we sort of saw that they're really, really in a financial mess. And, you know, players like Busquets and Alba and Piqué are getting lauded about the fact that they're taking a pay cut to get these players registered. I think while that's great on the part of the players, I think you have to look at the club's role in this and how badly this club is being run. One of the greatest clubs of all time, how badly it's being run. And I think the prime example is the Griezmann deal. They paid 120 million for him. Two seasons later, he's gone back to Atletico Madrid. Atletico Madrid can buy him back at one third of the price, basically making 80 million profit. He's on loan there. And I can probably guarantee you that he's going to be key for Atletico Madrid, and Atletico Madrid will end up finishing above Barca. So I think, you know, in the long term, Barcelona are not looking good. Even the players they have brought in are not... I mean, Aguero's always injured. Ansu Fati doesn't have a great injury record. Ousmane Dembele doesn't have a great injury record. So, I mean, like you said, their starting three is probably going to look like Brathwaite, Luke de Jong, and Depay. And Depay is the only quality player out of those three.
100%. They've really struggled, and it's really unfortunate to see a great club like Barcelona go down this road. The new president, Laporta, is trying his best to, you know, better the situation. And unfortunately, they've been forced to sell players like Messi and Griezmann, which will affect them.
Right. So, moving on from Barcelona, that's a club in bad shape, to another club that's increasingly looking worse and worse as the games go on. Arsenal sit 20th in the table. They've conceded 9. They haven't scored yet. Haven't got any points. They lost to Brentford. You can understand losing to City and Chelsea. Not the way they lost to City, but you can understand losing to those two clubs. But they lost to Brentford as well. Obviously a lot of questions about the manager, about the management. They spent, I think, the most in the Premier League and still not really managed to improve their squad. What do you think of their window? I'm not a big fan of their signings. 80 million on Ramsdale and Ben White. That's more than Tottenham spent this entire window, and we probably brought in all 6 players that are better than those two. So, I mean, you know, I don't see a vision for where Arsenal are going with these signings. Maybe a couple have been good, but what do you think?
I think, you know, like you said, Arsenal have spent the most in the Premier League. And they've honestly overspent for 2 players. Ben White, in my opinion, is definitely not worth more than 50 million. And they've paid 50 million for him, which is a lot, considering how much money United paid for players like Varane and Sancho. And they've got a goalkeeper who's got relegated twice for 25 million. And he's not even going to start for them because they've shown faith in Leno for 3 seasons, and they seem like they'll continue to show faith in Leno. And they've just spent 25 million on a backup goalkeeper who's got relegated twice in a row. But, you know, some of their signings, you know, especially Odegaard for 30 million, I think that's a bargain. He was crucial for them last season. I think he's going to have a similar role this season. He's going to be crucial for 30 million. I think I wouldn't call him a very good bargain, but I think that's a good price for Odegaard. They've got Tomiyasu on deadline day. I'll be honest, I haven't seen much of Tomiyasu, but from what I've heard, he's a very exciting prospect. He can play as a fullback and he can play as a center back. Obviously, Rai, you watched Tomiyasu play, so you'll have a better understanding of what he brings to us.
I watched him play a couple of times last season, and I obviously like really looked into his stats and some of his highlight reels when Spurs were looking at him early on in the window. I think this is the signing where Arsenal have done really well. I think this is an even better signing than Odegaard. He's someone who could play center back or right back. He's technically very, very good. More defensive minded than someone like, say, Bellerin. But, you know, I mean, he's the type of player that can really bring a sort of calm to that Arsenal backline that looks really, really chaotic at times. Actually, the entire team looks chaotic at times. And he's the sort of player that sort of calms the game down, you know. And he's a type of player you have on the field that will let the likes of Saka, Emil Smith-Rowe and Odegaard do their thing up front. And he'll be a rock at the back. So I think that's a signing that Arsenal fans can really, really look forward to.
Just to add, they've on the outgoings, they've let go a lot of deadwood players that weren't playing for them anyway. Players like Guendouzi, Torreira, Willian, Joe Willock. I think he's a brilliant signing for Newcastle. Hector Bellerin, who's gone on loan to Real Betis, and of course, William Saliba, who I still don't understand why Arteta did try William Saliba out in the centre back role. I think he's an exceptional player. Arsenal should have shown faith in him, but unfortunately, he's gone on loan to Marseille. It's just that, you know, if you have any other manager except Arteta, you give him these set of players, you know, these young, exciting talent of players in Odegaard, Tomiyasu, Ben White, even Lokonga, the players have got from Anderlecht, a defensive mid to partner with Partey in the double pivot. He's a great player. You give any other manager than Arteta these young crop of excellent players, you know, and add Bakayo Saka and Emil Smith-Rowe to that and Tierney, they won't be sitting 20th with having scored 0 goals and conceded 9 goals. You know, they'll be somewhere near the top 6 or top 8 if they have someone better. So, but, you know, a bad manager coupled with overpriced players, I think it's not really the best of the windows for the team. A 5 on 10, in my opinion.
Right. So, going from Arsenal to our next team in your club, Real Madrid, we've given them a 5 on 10. They lost out on Mbappe, which was the main bit of sort of transfer business they were looking to do. Ramos left, Varane left, so I think looking a bit thin in defense. But in my opinion, they've got one of the deals of the window with Camavinga. I think that's going to be the best midfielder in the world in the next 5 years, 6 years. If anybody hasn't seen him play, I would definitely recommend that you watch Real Madrid this season and also already have a look at what he brings through, you know, some of these YouTube clips. He's a fantastic player, but Ari, I'll let you get into it and let you get into the state of play at Madrid.
See, the transfer window started at a very bad note for us because our manager left us, Zidane left us, and then, you know, obviously one of my favorite players of all time, our captain Sergio Ramos left us. And then immediately after that, Rafael Varane left us. So, you know, it was bullet after bullet after bullet. But then we managed to sign David Alaba, who I've always been a fan of David Alaba. We finally signed David Alaba on a free transfer from Bayern Munich, who I think he's a brilliant, brilliant addition to the squad. You know, he can slot in at left back when Mendy is injured. I mean, still don't trust Marcelo. He'll essentially be used as a Ramos replacement at centre back along with Eder Militao. Even though we've lost Varane and Ramos, I wouldn't say that we are in a panic state at centre back because we have Militao and Alaba, who, in my opinion, are a solid defensive pair with Nacho and Vallejo as backups. I have my doubts about these two, but our Militao and Alaba are brilliant, in my opinion. And we've added, like, you know, Rai's songs about Camavinga. I think he's absolutely correct. He's a brilliant player. He's just 18 years old and he's been touted as the next big thing since he made his debut at age of 16 2 years ago against, and he won Man of the Match against Paris Saint-Germain. So we've added him for a bargain price of 30 million and we completed that deal within 5 hours, if I'm not wrong. So I think that's a big win for us. But you know, the biggest loss that we could have faced this season was we failed to buy Mbappe. And you know, we had enough money saved for Mbappe, but it was a failure on our part because we reached out to PSG a little less and they kept stalling us. So we didn't buy Mbappe, and that 200 million that we had saved we couldn't use it on any other player. I would have liked us to buy another center back or another midfielder, for example, or any other attacker. But we couldn't use the 200 million because of time constraints. But, you know, to be very honest, the Mbappe deal, I see the Mbappe deal failing in two different ways. One of them is obviously the one that we see happening is that PSG straight up financially overpowered Real Madrid. You know, they straight up said no to $220 million. They said, you aren't getting one of the best players in the team because we're going to the Champions League, so no. And Real Madrid failed to sign one of the biggest targets. But the second thing, which I think is the right thing to look at this failure, is that Perez showed to the world, he flexed his financial power to the world. Because, you know, I've heard a lot of people say they often confuse Madrid's financial situation to Barca's financial situation, which is completely wrong. You know, people have been asking, you know, where is Madrid getting so much money from? It's not that hard. We've not bought a player since 2019, and we've sold so many players. We sold Odegaard this season, Varane this season, and we sold Hakimi, Theo Hernandez in the past. So that's another way to look at it, that it's just Perez flexing his financial power and showing to the world that, yes, Real Madrid have the money, and next season we'll have more money. This is Perez showing Mbappe that, you know, we want you, we care for you. This is not on us. We've tried our best. PSG said no. So he showed Mbappe that he wants him, so that Mbappe doesn't sign a contract renewal and he gets a generational talent like Mbappe for free next season. So I think that is the way that people should look at this Mbappe failure, as a sort of a win for Madrid, because, like I said, they'll be getting Mbappe for free. But it's a 5-on-10 window for me, because we couldn't sign Mbappe or use the 200 million that we had saved on any other player that could have maybe strengthened the squad further.
Right. So moving from Madrid at 5-on-10 is another club that we've rated at 5-on-10. It's Man City. You know, this was a club that at the beginning of the window, we were all scared that, you know, I mean, they're going to go and pick up probably the two best players in the league, the two best English players in the league, definitely. And, you know, they're going to walk this league again. They brought in Grealish. That was a pretty straightforward deal. There was a release clause for 100 million. They paid it. There was a deadline for when they could have done it by with Villa. They did it within that deadline. So they got their, what seemed now to be their priority target, which is Jack Grealish. And they brought in a Brazilian young player, Keiki, for 9 million. In terms of outgoings, they had Angelino to Leipzig for 16 million, Jack Harrison to Leeds for 11 million, Mecha to Wolfsburg for 7 million, and Aguero on a free, Eric Garcia on a free. So they their net was about minus 80 million. Just a couple of thoughts on City's window. You know, like I said, they brought in Grealish, who's probably the most skillful player in the league, one of the best at winning fouls, and, you know, one of the better chance creators in the league, alongside Bruno Fernandes, Kane, and KDB. But I have a couple of questions in terms of the Grealish deal. They went and spent 100 million on him when they've got the likes of Sterling, Mahrez, you know, Bernardo Silva, Ferran Torres, Gabriel Jesus, who we've now seen can play off the left. You know, they've got tons and tons and tons of wingers. What they don't have is an out-and-out central striker. I said this before the season started, and I'll say it now. If City had gone and got Kane or a you know, proper striker, City would be the runaway winners of this league, even with Ronaldo, even with Lukaku coming in. But they didn't. You know, they spent 100 on Grealish, but they refused to pay that extra 30 million that Tottenham wanted for Kane. You know, whether you value Kane at 150 or not, I think one thing that I always held true about this saga was the fact that when Spurs didn't need to sell him, you did need to pay their asking price, even if you were overpaying. Like, you overpaid for Grealish. Grealish is not a 100 million player. He's maybe 60 to 80 million. And you're setting your own market by overpaying for one player and then expecting to pay less for a player that's probably, you know, much, much better than Grealish. So I never quite understood that. And I think, you know, Ferran Torres has had a good start to the season, but, you know, he's not an out-and-out striker. If they're struggling to score, which they rarely ever are, but if they are, then he doesn't give you that cutting edge. They also, you know, couldn't get the CR7 deal done in time because United came in and obviously Ronaldo went there instead. They sort of dilly-dallied for Messi. I think they were interested but didn't really go for it. After spending so much on Grealish, they couldn't bring in another winger. So I think for City, the timing was off. They should have gone for Kane first. If they had, and they had spent 150 on Kane, they probably could have put the 50 that extra that they would have put on, 50-100 extra they would have put on Grealish, they could have put that towards Messi. And then you're again talking about City running away with the league. But yeah, 5 on 10 just because they didn't strengthen, I think, in the one position that they needed to after last season. And they went and overpaid for a player that they didn't necessarily need. I'm not doubting his quality. I just don't think City needed Grealish as much as they needed someone like, say, Kane or Ronaldo.
I completely agree with you. I mean, City, everyone knew City going into this transfer market, they had just one goal. And that was to get a striker, and they failed in getting a striker, and they overpaid for Grealish. So I think you've covered most of the points. It's a 5 on 10 for Manchester City.
Right. So moving from Manchester City, in fifth place, we have Tottenham. A lot of ins and outs, I would say. I think probably the most total ins and outs on this list. In terms of outgoings, they very early on in the window sold Juan Foyth for about 13.5 million. They sold Toby Alderweireld to Al Duhail in Qatar for 11.5 million. Sissoko to Watford for about 3. Hart to Celtic for about 1 million. Then Rose on a free, Gazzaniga on a free. Lamela went in the swap deal for Brian Hill. And Aurier's contract was terminated at the end of the window last night. Just a little word on Aurier before I go on. I think, you know, he got a lot of stick from Spurs fans, other fans, who made fun of a lot. But I think I have to really commend his commitment. I think the one thing that sticks out and why I'm bringing this up today is because I think it was last season during the lockdown period when his brother had actually got shot in Paris and passed away. And the next day, Aurier was there on the field and he was playing. And I think, I mean, it's insane to think of. It's very, very commendable that he was there and he saw out his job. And obviously, wherever he does land up, I think all Spurs fans will wish him well. In terms of incomings, they finalized Emerson for 22.5 million last night. Brian Hill came in for 22.5 million. Pape Matar-Sarr, who's a really, really big talent from France, came in for 15 million and was loaned back to Metz in Ligue 1. Golini came in with the view of sort of looking at the long-term replacement of Lloris, whose contract finishes in a year. And he's currently on loan. And they brought in Christian Romero on loan with an obligation to buy next summer. You know, I think just a couple of quick thoughts from me. The negatives first, I think Spurs didn't really replace Bale's goals. He didn't get the most important goals last season, but he got 10 league goals. And those are the sort of goals that sort of, you know, won us the game against Southampton. I mean, he won us the game against Sheffield. You know, games where Kane and Son maybe didn't come up with the goals, Bale would always come up with them if he was playing. We also, Carlos Vinicius' loan ended and we didn't replace the backup striker. And I would possibly say, you know, I mean, this is a question mark for me. It has been in the first three games where we lacked a little bit of creativity, but now with Ndombele possibly being reintegrated into the squad now that he didn't get his transfer out, you know, I think the creativity problem will be dealt with if he's brought back into the team. In terms of the positives, Spurs have gone from the fifth oldest to the fifth youngest squad in the league. They moved out a lot of the deadwood. The rebuild that Poch spoke about 2.5 years back is underway. Paratici looks like he's got the reins from Levy and he's actually being allowed to do what he wants. and in places where he could spend, where he thinks that money is worth spending, Levy's letting him spend the money, that you could see in the 70 million bid for Lautaro and the sort of 50 million bids for Vlahovic. I think the most important move of Spurs' window was keeping Kane. Son signed a new contract, and they got in Italy's best defender last season, the Italian league's best defender last season, and one of Spain's biggest talents. And all of that with just a net spend of minus 30 million pounds. So I think all in all, it's been a good window from Spurs. If I would have wanted one more player, and this would have been the perfect window for me. But, you know, this is a fantastic start. We've got a young squad, and I'm really, really excited about what Nuno can do with them this season.
And I completely agree with you. And I think the biggest win out of this was that you guys kept Kane. I think he's really integral to how the way Spurs are playing. And the goals and the assists that he brings is unreplaceable. That was the biggest win that Spurs had this transfer window.
Yeah, so moving on from Spurs to Bayern. You know, I mean, Bayern's good window has been twice as sweet for them, because while they strengthened, they weakened their strongest rival from last season. You know, taking three of Leipzig's most important figures. So I'm going to let you get into what you've made of Bayern's transfer window. And, you know, I think all of us think they'll win the Bundesliga. But where these new players fit in and what you see from Leverkusen?
See, I think Bayern, even last season, they had one of the best, if not the best squad in Europe. And this season, they've just added, they've added to that squad. So I think they are going to the season even stronger than they were before. They have a better manager. Not that Flick wasn't good. I think Nagelsmann has way more potential, especially with younger players. I think he can do wonders with Sané. Struggled a bit last season. I think Nagelsmann can do wonders with Leroy Sané. He can do wonders with Gnabry. Obviously, they got Upamecano from Leipzig, and they got Sabitzer from Leipzig, and they got the manager from Leipzig. So, like you said, they have completely dismantled their closest competitors in the league. They're surely winning the Bundesliga. And I think last season, they could have at least reached the Champions League semi-final, if not for the unfortunate Lewandowski injury. If Lewandowski is fit throughout the season, I think they are, even with PSG's superstar signings and even with Manchester City having the deepest squad in Europe, I think Bayern Munich are still one of the favourites to win the Champions League, only because they were strong last season, and this season they're stronger after adding Upamecano, Sabitzer and a new manager in the team. So I think an 8 on 10 is a good indication of how their transfer business was. And I expect a lot from Bayern this season. Obviously, for them, anything, for them not getting to a Champions League semi-final should be considered a failure, considering they'll walk the league.
Right. So moving on from Bayern to Manchester United, who we've also given an 8 on 10. They brought in Jadon Sancho, Rafael Varane, obviously Cristiano Ronaldo, and Tom Heaton on a free. They sold Dan James for 26 million. In total, they spent 126, and they brought in 26, so net spend of minus 100, which was, I think, I'm not exactly sure of Arsenal's numbers, but either the biggest or second biggest net spend of the window. You know, they brought in probably the most clutch player, like I said, with a massive winning mentality, which has sort of been lacking in this United squad. They brought in Varane, who's solid at the back. Varane and Maguire, that's probably, I think, on paper, one of the best defenses in the world. Varane is also a winner, and I think he was a bargain at his price. Sancho is the sort of player that gets everyone on their feet, that, you know, gets the crowd behind the team. Fits very well, in my opinion, into that front four of him, Bruno Fernandes, Rashford and Ronaldo. The good vibes are with United. They've strengthened some of their key areas. And I think the only negative coming out of this transfer window is that they didn't sign a defensive midfielder. I think Camavinga is someone that they would have really, really wanted, but Madrid got him. Declan Rice is also someone they could have looked at, but, you know, he's very expensive. Actually, if you went back a season, if United had gone for a player like Højbjerg, then, you know, I mean, then this United team looks much more solid. And sometimes it is those sort of 10, 15 million defensive midfield signings that really propel you, you know, propel a team from challengers to title winners. Look at Kante at Leicester, Kante at Chelsea, players like Makalele. This is what I think Camavinga will be for United. For Madrid. So I think it remains to be seen. I think McTominay can really do a good job here as long as he's played. And I'd like to see more of Donny van de Beek this season in some role or the other. But otherwise, it's looking really good for United. They've got one of the best teams. I think they'll definitely be in that top three and it'll be really, really close for the title.
I agree with you. I mean, if they could have signed a DM, any DM better than Fred, it would have been a 10-on-10 window, in my opinion. You know, they ended their one of the biggest transfer sagas of the last 5-6 years in getting Jadon Sancho for a very bargain price. I mean, this guy is a generational talent. They got him for 76 million. That is a great bargain signing for Manchester United. They got one of the best defenders of the last decade in Rafael Varane for another bargain price for 36 million pounds. Another bargain buy for United. And obviously, you know, the hero returned home. The greatest player of all time, the most clutch player of all time. Cristiano Ronaldo's back in United. So I think that's an incredible win for them, especially if you look what he brings to United more than on the field. You know, forget the business point of view. He's the perfect role model to have in the team alongside Mason Greenwood. We've seen how... I think Mason Greenwood is a top three finisher in the Premier League, if not the best. He's a top three finisher. He can finish with the left foot, he can finish with the right foot equally well. And, you know, now he's going to learn from Cristiano Ronaldo. He's going to become even better. And obviously, they have Sancho on the left. Rashford on the left, Sancho on the right, Ronaldo up top, Bruno behind them. That's one of the best forward lines in entire Europe. Not just Premier League, that's one of the best forward lines in entire Europe. And their main issues last season were defending set pieces and scoring from set pieces. They've got Varane now, who's a massive upgrade from Lindelof. So their defending set pieces bit is covered. And they had a problem scoring headers. And now they've got the best header of the ball in Cristiano Ronaldo. So that's covered. But they're still lacking one missing piece, and that is the defensive midfield. And I think end of the day, that is going to cost Ole his job, because if they want to win the title, they needed that defensive midfielder, which unfortunately they haven't got. They got unlucky in the Fabinho deal. Liverpool got him before them. They got unlucky in the Camavinga deal. Madrid got him before them. Rice was too expensive, like you said. Maybe next season they can, with the money that they have, they don't need to focus on other positions. They can go buy Rice and or Wilfred Ndidi or Bissouma. But looking at this season, that one signing that they didn't get, defensive midfielder, will cost them in the season.
I think
8-on-10.
I think obviously, you know, an 8-on-10 window does put pressure on Ole. I think if they don't win a proper trophy this season, I don't see how he keeps his job. I think, you know, he's got a lot of friends, his own friends and ex-teammates in the media that sort of really prop him up. But I think with this squad, you have to win something. If you don't win something, then, you know, I mean, his job really has to be questioned. And a second or third place finish is really not going to be enough. So moving from United into the other challengers for the title that I see for this season in the Premier League, Chelsea. We've given them a 9-on-10. Two main signings. I think they would have liked to have made a third in Jules Koundé, but they brought in Lukaku. They brought in Saul on loan with an obligation. Good window. What do you think?
I think Chelsea had the best window in the Premier League. They, they let go of quality. I mean, their deadwood is quality deadwood. That's how great their academy is. You know, they sold Tammy Abraham, but most importantly, they put a buyback clause on him. So if he's playing well and they need a striker, they can easily get him back from Roma. They let go of Kurt Zouma, another quality deadwood, and they got good money for him. They let go of Fikayo Tomori, another quality deadwood. Zappa Costa, Bakayoko, long Premier League, Streetsford, forget Perrin, Oliver Giroud. Emerson Batshuayi going on loan to Besiktas. So I think their outgoing financed the move for one of the best strikers in the game right now, Romelu Lukaku, who comes in and improves the Chelsea side, to upgrade the Chelsea side to another level, in my opinion. You know, he's going to play every game. He's a massive upgrade on Timo Werner. Not that Timo Werner is bad. I think Timo Werner is really important, but just that Lukaku is so much better than him in scoring goals. And this is what Chelsea lacked last season, we still have. And their defenses, I think they have the best defense, one of the best defense in Europe. What Tuchel's done with them, I don't think they really needed Jules Koundé in the defense, because, to be very honest, they are pretty sorted in all the positions. They have Reece James at right wing back. Tuchel's used Hudson-Odoi as a backup right wing back. They have Chilwell and Alonso at left wing back, and obviously center backs are world-class, Rudiger, Christensen, and Cesar Azpilicueta. So, even without Koundé, I think this was a very, very perfect window from Chelsea. And Romelu Lukaku, like I said, I really like that guy. You know, he's strong, he's fast, and he's a really prolific scorer who's going to score 20 goals minimum in the Premier League. I can give that to you in writing. And the other signing that they made, Saul Niguez, he's been a forever. He's just 26 years old, but it feels like he's been playing for Atletico Madrid for more than a decade. That's how constant he's been for the Madrid side. And, you know, he won't be a starting 11 player, in my opinion, because they have Kante and Jorginho. But Saul is a type of player who can fill in for Kante, and he can also fill in for Jorginho, and he can also fill in for Kovacic, because he's so versatile. So I think that was a really, really good coup from Chelsea in getting him on deadline day for a loan plus an obligation to buy. That's some seriously good business for Tuchel. I would put them as one of the CL contenders. I think they can go back-to-back this season. And in my opinion, they're winning the Premier League, in my opinion.
Right, so I also had them as my Premier League winners. Now, the last club that we'll look at is obviously had a 10-on-10 window, PSG. And an important caveat here is that we've made these ratings from the perspective of the club, because I think from a larger perspective, neither me nor Ari are really big fans of PSG's window. I think the way it reflects on football looks really, really bad. The fact that there is a super club that can flout the FFP rules and have so much financial power, basically be backed by an entire country, I think that just doesn't sit right for me. I'm a little happy for Poch, and I'm fond of Messi, so I'll be okay with them winning stuff. But I think, you know, I mean, this really has to be sorted out by UEFA and FIFA, and looked into how, you know, I mean, a club can sign such players on such salaries and then say no to 220 million to balance their books from Real Madrid. But getting into their 10-on-10 window, they sold Mitchell Barker for 6 million. They got 2 million for Areola's loan fee to West Ham. They brought in Donnarumma on a free, Sergio Ramos on a free, Wijnaldum on a free, Messi on a free. Nuno Mendes on loan with a 6 million loan fee from Sporting Lisbon. Danilo Pereira, I think they finalized his transfer for 14 million. And they brought in Hakimi for 54 million. So net spend of minus 66, which on the face of it doesn't look bad. But obviously, when you look at the salary that these, the wages that these players that they signed on free transfers are getting, it sort of doesn't look great. So negatives, obviously, like I said, doesn't look great on football. Very, very unfair to the teams in Ligue 1 who are struggling financially. Unfair to the other teams that, like, for example, Barcelona or the teams in Serie A that aren't being able to compete. Obviously, the Premier League is doing much better. But positives from a PSG perspective, because there were no negatives from a PSG perspective. They did the unthinkable and they brought Messi to their club, which, you know, I mean, probably one of the biggest transfers ever. They got two amazing fullbacks, and fullbacks, young, fast fullbacks under Pochettino are so vital. You know, I said this last season that if Pochettino had two good fullbacks, that Champions League semi-final tie would have looked very different. And I'm pretty sure that this season, more than having Messi, more than having Ramos and Donnarumma, I'm really looking forward to watching Nuno Mendes and Hakimi on each wing. They've got a brilliant central midfielder who's perfect for the way Pochettino plays. They've got the best goalkeeper for the next 10 years in Gigio Donnarumma. And I think vitally, they've kept Mbappe to make up that, you know, dream front three or front four. Depends whether Di Maria comes in or not, of Neymar, Messi, Mbappe, and possibly Di Maria. So yeah, I mean, doesn't look great in the larger picture, but I think happy days for PSG. I think they're going to definitely make it to the final of the Champions League, if not take the trophy themselves.
I think, you know, this window is pretty perfect on field and off field. You've already spoken about how bad it is for football and how they've ruined football, the sport that we love. So that is what you've already spoken about. But I think this window, if it fails, is going to be the biggest failure in the history of football, in my opinion. Because the only reason that they've said no to 200 million, apart from that, apart from the reason that they don't care about money because they get funded by an entire country, is that they are so confident that they're going to win the Champions League with Mbappe in the team. If they somehow fail to win the Champions League, I think it's, in my opinion, I think I hate PSG, but, you know, even keeping my hate aside, if they don't win the Champions League, it will be the biggest failure we've seen in football history, because they've literally, they have the best player of all time. They have possibly the third best player of a generation, Neymar. They have the best generation talent in the world right now in Mbappe. They have the best keeper, like you said, Donnarumma, Hakimi, and Nuno Mendes. So they have, teams don't get more super than this. They just don't. So it might bite PSG a lot if they, and I honestly don't see them in the Champions League, because I honestly don't think how Pochettino can control so many egos in one squad. You know, because he's a great manager, no doubt about it. But, you know, if even for a manager like Pep Guardiola, it's tough for a manager to control so many egos in one squad. I mean, you have Neymar, Mbappe, two of the players who have big egos, and on top of that you add Messi to the team, and Donnarumma, who left Milan because of money problems, he also has a big ego. So I think if they don't win the Champions League, this 10-on-10 window will go crashing down to a 0-on-10, in my opinion. But as it stands, 10-on-10.
Yeah, so that's it for our 10 teams that we've sort of focused on for and rated their transfer windows. Just before we end tonight's episode, I just want to name a couple of other teams that have had good windows, and then we'll name about 10-15 players that have made transfers in this transfer window that we haven't been able to mention tonight that you should look out for this season. So in terms of teams, we've got Aston Villa. You know, the three main transfers they brought in to replace Grealish were Danny Ings, brilliant start of the season, Emi Buendia, who I think will pick up after the international break, Leon Bailey, who once he's integrated into the squad will look really, really good in that Villa team. And I think they've done a good job of replacing Grealish. I think you'll only see it after a couple of months once these guys are integrated. But I think they've done a really good job. Then we've got Atletico Madrid. Ari, your quick thoughts on them?
I think they are the strongest team in terms of squad depth in La Liga at the moment. Griezmann, he didn't fit in Barcelona that well. He's going to fit perfectly in a two-man attack with Suarez, Griezmann, and they're going to have Joao Felix behind them. I think brilliant. And now they've also added Cunha as a backup striker along with Correa that they already had. So they have a lot of strength in that attacking positions. And on top of that, they've added an exciting player, Rodrigo De Paul, who's going to take up Saul's place in the team, start most of the games for them alongside Koke. But the one thing that concerns me for Atletico is that the defense. But on a whole, I think they've had a reasonably good transfer window, Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, then we've got Inter, who got Hakan Calhanoglu from AC Milan. They replaced Lukaku with Zeko. They brought in Joaquin Correa. They kept Lautaro Martinez. You know, they brought in Dumfries to replace Hakimi. Simone Inzaghi to replace Conte. I think they've done a good job with this window. And quickly to finish off, we've got West Ham and we've got Leicester, who both brought in some good young players and some good overall squad replacements. And finally, to look at the transfers to watch out for from this window. My first one is Daniel Malen from PSV to Dortmund. Ari?
I'd say Cucurella from Getafe to Brighton. I think he's an exciting Spanish player. I really like him.
Then I went for Griezmann from Barca to Atletico.
And then I think Rodrigo De Paul, to Atletico Madrid from Udinese. Excellent player.
Tammy Abraham, Chelsea to Roma. I think he's already started well, two assists and a goal in his first two games. He's going to have a really, really, really good season. And without Ronaldo there, I think he'll be up there for the Golden Boot race.
And Usman Edouard from Celtic to Crystal Palace, he's going to compliment Zaha and share the goal scoring burden at Crystal Palace.
I think that's a really good young team that they have at Crystal Palace. Really fun team to watch when all their players are fit. You know, they got in Michael Olise as well, who's another transfer to watch out for. But I've gone for Danny Ings from Southampton to Villa. You know, I think there's not much that needs to be said about this transfer. I think he's a brilliant player, already showing it. Ari?
Leon Bailey from Leverkusen to Aston Villa. Exciting player.
I've gone for Locatelli from Sassuolo to Juve. He was one of my favourites at the Euros. And, you know, I think once he's into this team, he's going to be really, really good. And he's going to be key to what Juventus do in the next couple of seasons in rebuilding in the post-Ronaldo era.
I've gone with Emi Buendia, Norwich City to Aston Villa. He's going to take a Grealish role as a main creator in the team, and I think he's brilliant at it.
Then there's Hakan Kananoglu, like I just mentioned, making the Milan switch from AC to Inter. Already started amazingly in the first game, and I think he'll carry on in the same vein. Obviously, with the unfortunate Eriksen situation, I think he's going to be key to creating their chances.
Then I've gone with Edin Dzeko. From Roma to Inter Milan. Obviously, he's not a Lukaku, but he has tons of experience and he has other attributes which will help and complement Lautaro Martinez in the Inter attack.
And finally, I've gone for Joaquin Correa from Lazio to Inter. I think he's already scored two goals on his debut. He's going to do really, really well to alternate and give a different option to Dzeko, you know, when they need more pace, more other than Lautaro, obviously, to partner Lautaro in that front line. So yeah, so that's our take on the last couple of months and the transfer window that has gone by. We're going to be back with you next week talking about not just the impact this transfer window has had, but also the impact of the first three game weeks on our predictions for the top four in the three leagues that we are sort of focusing on, and the top two or three players to watch out for, you know, sort of reworked players to watch out for in these leagues. And obviously look out for our FPL video coming out this week. I've personally played my wild card. I think you've got to go with Ronaldo. Like we saw tonight, he scored two goals. I think you've got to get him into your team. So yeah, stay tuned and thank you for listening, guys.
Stay safe, guys.